One that'll be watching this amazing interview for the creative leader interview. As soon as I got this assignment, there was one person in my mind that I knew I wanted to interview. I was like, this is exciting. I have the privilege, the pleasure, and the honor of introducing a man that made my last assignment in the Air Force memorable, successful, and impactful. We did some amazing things together, and his leadership style, you know, I could tell stories about his leadership style, but I witnessed it early on, and I was like, we need that guy. I didn't have the power to make it happen, but somehow the powers that be made it happen. So I'm excited today to interview Colonel Nasheed Salahuddin, United States Air Force.
Hey, Johnny. So, first of all, can I call you John? You know, I don't want to take away the dignity of retiring as a chief master sergeant. So I want to certainly
keep calling me chief, and I'm like, it's John.
Yeah. but first of all, you know, really appreciate this opportunity. You and I have spent countless hours talking about leadership, and really when you and I worked together, I felt that we led together, not me alone, because I had that title, and I'll touch bases on that. You know, I think leadership really is a group sport. So I'll talk about it a little bit in terms of how that influenced how I've led in any role that I have.
I like that. Leadership is a group sport. I'm stealing that.
Yeah, do that. Uh-huh.
Well, let's get to the first question. So, hit my buttons wrong. Let me get that right. There we go. Show it. There we go. Who has been very influential to you in your leadership journey?
Yes, I have a number of people that have been influential, but one that sticks out to me is General Guy Walsh. So he was the wing commander at the 175th Wing in Maryland. And he brought me to the Maryland Air National Guard. At the time, I was in the 913th in the Air Force Reserve. So let me just tell you my quick story about him and why his leadership influenced me so much. So this was during one of our monthly drill weekends, and I was leaving outside of the gate on a Saturday, you know, Saturday and Sunday, we go to military drill. And something told me, Nasheed, look to your left. So I looked to my left, and there was a car speeding, ran the red light, T-boned me. I was knocked unconscious. I didn't come through. And I don't think I ever told you the story. I didn't come through until I was in the ambulance. So in the ambulance, they brought me to the hospital. So I'm in the hospital, and you know, they're doing all the tests and everything. I was fortunate; the car was totaled, but they said I had a concussion, but I was going to be okay. So at the time, I was doing military duty in Baltimore, but I lived in New Jersey, so about 3 hours away. Now, car's totaled. I didn't really have a way to get home to New Jersey, so I got a call from General Walsh's executive officer, and she said, hey, you know, General Walsh is going to meet you at the hospital, and then he's going to get you home to New Jersey. I'm like, oh, who's he going to have to, you know what I mean? I was excited. I'm like, okay, my wife now doesn't have to come home, you know, pick me up. So he comes to the hospital, and I was like, hey, sir, who's taking me to New Jersey? I am. I'm like, you're a general officer. You're going to drive me to New Jersey. Right. And he was like, yeah. So, you know, his dad lived in New Jersey. He was like, hey, I'm gonna take you home. I'm gonna spend the night at, you know, my dad's, and I'm gonna come back. So the funny thing is, wow, I'm like, I'm so excited, because not many people get to spend like 3 hours getting mentored, you know, by the general. So the first hour was pretty exciting. We were having the conversations and stuff. So it was probably about 8 o'clock at night. So I figured, okay, you know, got all my mentoring in, let me now take a nap. So I try to lay back and take a nap. And he was like, hey, now see, one more thing. So he talked to me.
Couldn't let you go to sleep with a concussion.
Couldn't let me go to sleep. I was ready to get out of that car at the time. So I didn't know until I next saw him a month from now. He was like, hey, Nasheed, do you know why I talked to you that whole time? I was like, sir, I was trying to figure that out. He said the doctors told him, hey, with concussions, don't let the person go to sleep. So I say all that to say that, you know, General Walsh is a servant leader because he didn't have somebody else drive me, which he easily could have. He decided to do that himself. And I remember that it inspired me so much that if I overheard people saying something negative about General Walsh, like I stepped in like, whoa. You don't know the same person I know, right? And it really inspired me to step up my game. And I would go through walls for him just because he was that servant leader who looked at the people who worked for him as being people he needed to serve. So that really epitomized, you know, what I look at in terms of, you know, people who influence me.
I think that's awesome because we really got to be the beneficiaries of that because you are definitely a servant leader and you served us well. Like people would be so scared, but you would just be coming through the aisle just like, hey, I just want to see how you're doing. I didn't want
absolutely.
And people were shocked by that.
Yes. Yeah, you know, it was different than the person who preceded me, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, no doubt.
All right, number two, what has been one of your most transformational leadership assignments?
The one that by far was the most transformational one is my deployment to Iraq. This was back in 2011. So if you remember 2011, essentially the United States had made the decision to transition out of Iraq. So I was part of a transitional team who was focused on really turning everything over to the Iraqi government. So I was there responsible for that team. Now, just because of my rank at the time, I was a lieutenant colonel at the time. Basically, they said, okay, well you're going to be the S3. So most of the folks on the team were Army. So they didn't use Air Force terms, you know, for responsibility. So S3, basically operations. Now, John, as you know, I'm a military personnel officer. I really don't know anything about operations.
That's a common thread through your career, though, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. this is very true. So I was responsible, but the reality was, I had an incredible team. So it consisted of folks from the Army, the Air Force. We also had some folks from Department of Homeland Security. So I remember my first meeting with them, I was very transparent. And I said, hey, I don't know a whole lot about operations, but I'm blessed with having you all who are the experts. I'm going to lean on you for your expertise. And I'll focus my attention on those things that I'm good at, which is having those interactions with our military senior leadership and then really leading those interactions with the Iraqi senior officials. So it's one of those situations where you try to leverage your strengths. So me and John, you know this about my background, you know, grew up Muslim, this name Salahuddin. Salahuddin was a historic figure that actually was from Iraq, the northern part of Iraq. So I remember my first meeting with the Iraqi generals. They kind of looked at me like, who is this black guy with this name Salahuddin, right? So I figured I'm going to use that to my advantage. And anybody listening to this call, if you spent some spent time in the Middle East, before you're able to do business, you have to do a relationship, right? So I remember all of our engagements, senior leader engagements, they didn't want to talk about things we needed to do first. They wanted to sit down and drink tea, and they wanted to learn about my family and my connection with Islam and how did I get this name, right? So I was able to quickly build a rapport with those senior leaders, and then my experts were able to help us to get the job done. So let me tell you just a quick story that's an example of that. So at the time, the United States was, again, transitioning out, and we were trying to build capacity for the Iraqi Ministry of Interior so that they can run things on their own. So there was a land border that the United States government was building, a $30 million, you know, pristine facility along the border between Iraq and Iran. So official U.S. policy was that we wanted that port to either be powered by Iraqi power, electricity, or we wanted it to be powered using fuel, right? We, the U.S. government, official position was we didn't want it to be powered by Iran. Now, the crazy thing, based on my engineers, they said, hey, the only reliable power source is getting it from Iran. So I'm in a tough leadership position here. My senior leaders in the U.S. government official position was we're spending this money on this border crossing, port facility, but you know, we wanted it to be either powered with unreliable Iraqi power or basically diesel fuel. And basically my job was to be an advisor. So I tried to figure out, okay, how can I be a good advisor but still be compliant with official US policy? So what I did was when I met with the Iraq Ministry of Interior, I said, hey, let me be clear. Let me tell you what my country's official position is. You know, we would like you to either use power from, you know, your own country or diesel fuel, right? But let me be clear. We'll provide you with diesel for the next 6 months. After that, you're on your own. Now, as you and your engineers already know, you know, Iran has power too, and candidly, it's much more reliable. However, let me restate what our official government policy is. Regardless of what you decide, me and the American team will not be here in 6 months. So it's up to you to decide ultimately what you're going to do. They decided to go with Iranian power, right?
Of course.
But again, I stayed compliant with my government's official policy and my senior leaders. And I was there. My title was senior official consulting the Iraqi Ministry of Interior. So I was an advisor. I wasn't making decisions because we were in transition phase. If I was in Iraq a year earlier, I wouldn't have had that. You know, I would have had a different position, right? So, you know, really when you talk about leadership, and I tie creative leadership also to flexibility. And that was a situation where I had to be creative regarding how I handled this particular situation. Because, again, you know, I wear this uniform and I have to, you know, comply with the senior leaders. But at the same time, and you know this, John, we always have to give our best advice, right?
You definitely gave them the information to make an informed decision.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's how I view it.
Awesome. Awesome. Question number three. What would you consider to be your leadership mantra or motto?
Well, it all ties back to what I just said, right? So really, two things that I would say. Number one is you always have to leverage what your individual strengths are. You can't be somebody else, right? So as you know, I am a student of leadership, and I'm constantly reading books and listening to Audible on different leaders and leadership styles, right? So I just finished up the Audible on, there's a fairly recent autobiography of Elon Musk, right? So, you know, just looking at his life and his leadership style, it's kind of like, you know, I don't want to become him or do what he's doing in the way, but there's certain elements that you can pick up, strength, weaknesses, those kind of things, right? But he focused on being him and his own style and approach. And I think for any leader, you have to figure out how you can lead by being authentic, your own style and approach to doing things. That's the first thing. And the second thing is it ties back to that first story that I mentioned. Leverage the strengths of your team. Kind of figure out, you know, who has strengths and knowledge on your team, and leverage that. You don't have to do it all yourself, right? So those are the two things that I can say about that question.
Leveraging the team. What would we have done without our team? I tell you.
Yep. No doubt.
All right. Question four. How much of a role has creativity played into your leadership style and journey? You've answered that a lot, but let's just go with it anyway.
Yeah, I would say it has been a key factor in those times where I've been successful as a leader. And when I haven't been as successful as I have the ability to be, it's contributed towards why I wasn't as successful. Right. So I think it's incredibly important for any leader to be flexible, to be creative in terms of how they approach any particular leadership problem. You know, so that has been critical for me.
You know, we're military guys by trade, so I think we've had this conversation many times. Your creativity was truly on display in those situations where you didn't have the absolute power to just
say, oh, no doubt. At this. Yep. There is no doubt about it. Mm-hmm.
All right, number five, what would be your pillars of highly effective leadership?
Yeah, so a couple things. One is really looking at trust. And you probably saw when you and I worked together, my biggest priority in the very beginning is building the trust of the team. So whether you're talking about military, you're talking about in a corporate environment, I spend quite a bit of my time in a corporate environment, whether you're talking about sports, it is extremely important to build up the trust of your team. And let me just take a second to talk about the fact that, you know, I'm a firm believer that the leadership approach and style that we as leaders have to take has really changed over the years. So I'm a student of kind of generational leadership, right? So I happen to be Generation X. So the style and approach, you and I both, that you use for Gen X is very different from like millennials or Gen Z. So I have a 19-year-old, my son, who John, you know really well, is Gen Z. And how I lead him as a father, it is completely different than how my father led me. So the thing that I would say from a leadership perspective is you have to meet people where they are. So in terms of pillars of effective leadership, you know, it is incredibly important for you to make sure that you build that trust And if you build that trust, then you know folks will move forward with you. And again, I think it has changed so much. Just to connect one more thing about sports, Bill Belichick, you know, for those of you who are sports fans listening to this, is I think without a doubt, I don't think you can argue he's the most successful professional football coach that's ever lived, with 6 Super Bowls, and he doesn't have a job now. And I think a big part of that is because his style and approach to leadership no longer matches the current NFL players. And I think what we're seeing in the NFL and sports leagues and in business is that the approach that you have to take is you have to build that trust first. The leaders that we're seeing excelling are able to effectively do that. You know, so he's now not coaching. Another team didn't pick him up. And then now a lot of the NFL coaches that they're hiring are what they call players coaches, or those that can connect with the players that are on the team.
Extremely insightful. That's exactly what's going on. And you can't have these hard fist guys. So thank you.
It worked 20 years ago. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. It was the approach then, but it doesn't work with the people who I lead now, you know, regardless of what company or environment.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Number 6, is there a specific resiliency story or event that defined your leadership?
Yeah, definitely. So I think I told you this story. So when I was back at the 175th Wing, so the top position at an Air Force wing is the wing commander, and then the position right under that was the vice wing commander. So I, at the time, was told by the person who was the current wing commander, hey, you're going to be my next vice wing commander, right? So to me, it was kind of already said and done, and I was ready to go into that role. So he left, went to a different job, and then the next wing commander came in and said, hey, I know what you were told, but Nasheed, you're not my guy.
I don't know you. I got somebody else.
Yep. I got somebody else, right? So from a resiliency perspective, I mean, that was probably the lowest point in my military career. This job that I thought it was all mine, and I was told, okay, you're not the guy, you're not it. Devastated. I remember coming home that night and being upset, and I walked in, and you know my youngest son Omar, at the time he was probably maybe a toddler, so he was maybe 3 years old. So really, he taught me what was most important. So once he came and we started playing, I forgot all about whatever was going on at that job, right? So I would tell anybody regarding resiliency in your career, it cannot be all about you and your career. Because I still had a job where I had to lead these people. And if they saw my disappointment, how is that going to affect them? Right. And people will pick up on that. Right. So everybody knew I was supposed to be the vice wing commander. Right. It was a common thing. So I had to address it. You know, so at my next staff meeting, it was kind of one of those situations where it was the elephant in the room. And I just was transparent and say, hey, I was told I was in contention for it. I'm not going to, be it. I was told, but I'm going to continue to be the best mission support group commander and lead you all. That was tough, right? Because, you know, this is something that I aspired to, But really, you know, as the wing commander, he had the right to choose his own team. Right. And I still continue to serve him. And then obviously I ended up coming to the headquarters and obviously working with you. But that's what I would say in terms of resilience. Make sure whatever job you're doing, that's not your life.
Woo! Yeah. Yeah.
Because for too many people, it is.
Well, oh, we know plenty of them. So,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. No doubt about it. Mm-hmm.
All right, number seven. How do you remedy the issue? I'm laughing because I probably know how you answer this one, but how do you remedy the issue of poor leadership in your team?
Yeah, a couple things, and you've seen this for sure, right? So one is you have to determine whether or not if you're seeing poor leadership by people on your team, if it's an issue of skill or will. So you have to decipher whether or not it's a matter of their ability or desire. If it's a matter of ability, then it's a situation I might be able to work with you, right? Hey, we get you trained up, you know, we get you the skills that you need. If it's a matter of will or desire, then one of us has to go. Right. So,
and in probably all of the cases, it's going to be you.
Yes, exactly. And you just,
it's not going to be me. It's not going to be me. You're going to have to go.
And I think people respect it more when you just say, you're just transparent and you just sit down and talk to them and say, hey, obviously this is not going to work out. Let me help you find somewhere else to go. Right. And it's just having an honest conversation with people and just kind of letting them know and not, you know, beat around the bush. And you know, sometimes it's a matter of just, you know, not having a situation where you're ever going to be able to, you know, be in sync with that person. And the rest of the team shouldn't have to suffer because of that.
That is right. All right. So how do you provide constructive feedback that is helpful and not hurtful to your team members?
I think the most important thing is it cannot be personal. So to me, you have to focus on the performance and not the person. I think a lot of people have difficulty with that, right? And when they give feedback, it's about why that person is a bad person and why they're not good. No, it's not about that, right? It's, you have to be specific to say, hey, here's the expectation, you know, here are the things that you're not doing, and here's how I'm going to help you to get to that point. You know, so that's really, I think, the key is to not make it personal. And sometimes certainly that is difficult to do, and some people are better than others in doing that. But if you start from the early stage of building that trust, and the people who work with you know that it's coming from a good place, I think you'll be a whole lot more effective.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Never make it personal. I've been there where a leader made it personal. So
yeah,
I've been there too. Early.
Yeah. Yeah. I no doubt I've been there too.
Oh, this is probably my favorite question out of all of them. I almost wanted to put it last, but I wanted to get some advice for you before we. But this right here was my favorite question. Number nine, how would you want to be defined and remembered as a leader?
Yeah, I think about this a lot, right? And what this, another way of phrasing that is, what do you want your legacy to be? Right? What do you want people to say about you when you're not here? So a couple of things that comes to mind for me is I would want my legacy to be that, hey, you know what, no matter what, Nasheed cared. He cared about the people who work with him. He cared about the mission. it wasn't about him personally. That's really the first thing that I think of. And then the second thing is he left the organization better than he found it. So no matter what job I've had, I've always tried to take that same approach to every job, right? Build that trust. People know that I care about them and what's going on with them beyond just the work aspect. And, you know, I want to make sure we lead an organization where it's going to be better than we found it. And sometimes that's very uncomfortable for people, right? Because I think for all of us, we are in our comfort zone. But I've had numerous situations where there was some discomfort where we went through that process. But at the end of it, it was like, hey, you know what? Uncomfortable in the beginning, but you did make us better. I learned these different skills, or I see the result of the things that you pushed us towards. So that's what I've always tried to focus on.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Listen, you're back up at HQ, so you know.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I'm back in it now. There's no doubt about it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So last question, last but not least, what is one piece of advice you would give to someone aspiring to be a creative leader?
Let me give two things. The first thing is you absolutely have to find something you're passionate about. If you want to be a creative leader, it is extremely important to find a job, a career, or an organization that you truly believe in the mission of that organization. I mean, for me, having served both in corporate and in the military, in the Air Force and Air National Guard, you know, from an early stage, I've kind of believed in what we as an organization in the Air Force and Air National Guard do in terms of, you know, defense of the nation. If I didn't believe in it, I wouldn't be in it. I would have already retired. And I would have left the organization. That's number one. Number two is make sure you are constantly in a state where you are learning as a leader. Because I don't think that you can be a creative leader unless you are a student of leadership. And your leadership style and approach, you have to adjust based on changing circumstances, the environment. I mean, I'm very candid with you. So I make adjustments to my own leadership depending on whether I'm corporate or military, right? You're going to get the same core with me, but then a style and approach is going to adjust somewhat depending on the organization that I'm in. You know, so As a creative leader, you have to do that, right? You have to take in the environment that you're in. You have to take in new information. You have to learn and apply those skills. And you can probably attest to this, John, more than anybody else in terms of being a creative leader. In my military leadership, I certainly took from a lot of things that I knew in corporate and brought it to the military context and say, hey, you know, here's how things are done in corporate. Let's add to what is already a solid foundation that we have from military and apply these things. And I think we can even be better. So that's something I think that can help distinguish you as a leader.
Oh, no, I definitely, I was going through my pictures and I had some pictures of my notes from one of our program management boards when we were going through our project management or yep. project management. Yeah, I had some yeah. of my notes in my pictures. So now I'll never forget. We got up there in the offsite and everybody was just like, there's nothing we can do, and I'm sick of this. And you got up and said, well, we got some ideas and this. And I said, we need him.
Yes. I remember. Yep, yeah. I remember. Mm-hmm.
No, so that's all of my questions. Definitely appreciate you taking time out your busy schedule. And after listening to you answer those questions, I know I'm going to get an A on this one.
Yeah, appreciate the time. And if I could say, you know, one last thing, one last thought about leadership. You know, so I think that a lot of people think that leadership is a role. This person is CEO or manager or whatever they are, right? So I've always felt that you could be in a individual contributor role that not have a team, and you could be an outstanding leader in that role as well. You are probably flexing different aspects of leadership and probably using more influence in terms of your leadership style and approach as opposed to authority. But certainly, regardless of the position or the title that you're in, you know, I think someone can really excel as a leader in all those kinds of situations and different jobs.
I totally agree. I think that's always the measure of a high quality leader, someone that has begun to flex those leadership muscles well before they had the positions or the titles. Like,
yes.
That is always a definite sign to me that this is an up and coming or a current leader, when they can lead with influence and without having the actual title, position, or authority. So,
no doubt about it.
Yeah, thank you for that. Thank you for that. So, I'm the format is getting me here, but I think we're good. So I'm gonna stop recording here. But again, thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate the time.
Yeah.